ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, the hunt for the alleged killer of two Victorian police officers continues in the state's northeast. Also, former Liberal Minister Linda Reynolds wins her defamation case against Brittany Higgins. And retired West Coast Eagle Mitch Brown becomes the first AFL player to come out as bisexual.
This is a window of opportunity for the AFL to engage in some really deep thinking about how they can create a safer environment.
First this evening to Victoria, where police have named the two officers killed in an ambush in the state's northeast yesterday. They were Detective Leading Senior Constable Neil Thompson and Senior Constable Vadim Davart. Their alleged killer, a self-proclaimed sovereign citizen, has now been on the run for more than 24 hours. Police are continuing to search for him in dense bushland near the town of Porepunkah. Luke Radford begins our coverage.
Of the 10 police officers who attended a home in Porepunkah in Victoria's northeast, two didn't make it home. One was 35-year-old Senior Constable Vadim Davart. He was from Belgium and joined the force 7 years ago. His colleagues describe him as an avid traveller who was fluent in four languages and loved taking motorcycle trips. The other, Detective Leading Senior Constable Neil Thompson, who was 59. He was a 38-year veteran of the Victoria Police who had recently built a new home and was planning his retirement. Both were shot and killed, allegedly by 56-year-old Desi Freeman. Jacinta Allen is Victoria's Premier.
It is to those family and loved ones that I convey my deepest sympathy, and also to that wider Victoria Police family who are feeling this grief, feeling this hurt so keenly, yet continue to put on that uniform with pride and courage and go to work to keep our community safe, and particularly to those officers who are involved in the active search that's going on in the northeast right now.
Victorian Police Minister Anthony Carbines also paid tribute.
Those two fallen officers are among now 175 others who have lost their lives in the line of duty here in Victoria. And in spite of those harrowing events, police members continue to hunt for an armed and dangerous offender.
Several memorials have been held across the state to mourn the slain officers, including at St Matthew's Church in nearby Albury. Hal Smith, a retired police officer who served 34 years, was there.
It makes you feel sick, just the thought that they're running, just doing their job, and this has happened to them unprovoked. They offered no threat to this person. They were obviously lawfully going about their duty.
Meanwhile, back in Porepunkah, the search for Mr. Freeman continues. After the shooting, he disappeared into the bush and hasn't been seen since. The town itself remains largely locked down, and police have declared a no-fly zone. Misty Rose Wilson is a Porepunkah local and business manager.
Today, listen, it's a bit sombre. There's a bit of an eerie feeling in the air, and it has been like that for the past 24 hours. You know, the community is definitely shook, and the community is just trying to band together as much as possible at this time to offer support to each other.
While police have urged locals to stay indoors, Misty Rose Wilson says there is still some movement in the area.
From Porepunkah to Bright, there seems to be a little bit of travel happening. I am actually a resident on that Mount Buffalo Road, and this morning was able to get down to my local business for a time. And then upon trying to get back to the property, it seemed like some things had ramped up. So we were advised that the road was closed again and not to be moving around up and down that road.
While the search continues, the public's attention has shifted to the man who allegedly pulled the trigger. Desi Freeman, formerly known as Desmond Philby, lives on a property on the outskirts of Porepunkah. Local resident Mark told reporters Mr. Freeman seemed like a nice person.
Look, I knew him and he was friendly, decent, sort of seemed like a decent fellow. I know his son, he works, I know where he works. He's a lovely, lovely boy. So I just don't know what happened, you know, just someone just flipped out and just lost it.
But in recent years, Mr. Freeman has had several clashes with law enforcement. Mr. Freeman identifies as a sovereign citizen, a loose movement of people who believe the government, the courts and the police are all illegitimate. In 2018, he appeared in an episode of A Current Affair over a minor neighbourhood dispute.
These dirt bike ferals move here and they think it's the Wild West.
In fact, it's the wild northeast on Victoria's snow.
In his most recent legal stoush with Victoria Police, Mr Freeman took an officer to the Supreme Court last year over the cancellation of his driver's licence. Court documents show he represented himself and during the hearing called police friggin' Nazis and terrorist thugs. Joe McIntyre is a professor of law at UniSA. He says sovereign citizens have flown under the radar, but are becoming increasingly dangerous.
I mean, we were warning about this last week. Like, this is a real risk. You know, once people start choosing which laws they want to obey and which they can just ignore, then it's a really small step from that into ignoring prohibitions against violence, about gun crimes. And we've seen that in America, and it felt like it was already a matter of time.
Desi Freeman remains at large. There have been no confirmed sightings of him since 10:30 a.m. yesterday.
Luke Radford with that report. And our reporter Kimberly Price is in Porepunkha this evening as the search for the gunman continues. Kim, what's the scene where you are?
It's very quiet. That's because the town is on lockdown. There's around 1,000 people who live here. Currently, I'm outside the primary school and I can see a cafe, a pub, which are all closed. The petrol station does look to be open for a few necessities there. There's a few cars going past me. They're mainly the media cars and also a few police cars going back and forth between the search area and the headquarters area on the other side of town. Porepunkha itself is about a 3.5 hour drive northeast of Melbourne and it's about an hour south drive of the twin towns of Albury, Wodonga. And it's quite beautiful here. There's a valley with mountains all around, and those mountains have a lot of dark clouds descending upon them, which tells me there's a fair bit of rain on the way.
So, Kim, I know the school was in lockdown yesterday, but are Porepunkha locals actually being told to stay home or are they free to move around a bit?
So today they were told to also stay home, so similar to that lockdown measure that they got yesterday. It's unknown whether that lockdown directive will continue for tomorrow. It just depends how the search goes tonight.
You mentioned that it's a beautiful area, but what sort of conditions are police facing as they search for this man?
Well, Sam, my phone is telling me it's 11 degrees at the moment, but it feels like 5. It is freezing. The rain has eased for the moment, but it goes between, you know, a downpour to just a bit of light rain to nothing at the moment. I think the key condition to really kind of paint a picture for listeners is the bushland around here. It is very dense bushland lining these mountains. And when we say that, there's wild grasses, shrubs, bushes and trees, making it very hard to see just a few metres in front of you. So search crews in the active search zone will be facing those tough conditions. There is a police chopper up in the air at the moment. I've seen another one on the ground at the police headquarters. Now, that helicopter is circling overhead with a lot of cloud in the area. Where that area that it's searching is just outside of town. If you were to drive there, you would drive down Mount Buffalo Road. But that road itself is actually cut off by police. There is about a kilometre that you can access, which is just lined by media crews at the moment trying to get a glimpse of this helicopter. And if you were to continue to drive down that road, you would also come across the secluded property where the two Victorian policemen were shot and killed yesterday. And so that is the active search zone that continues through the night.
Kimberly Price reporting from Porepunkha in Victoria's northeast. The former Liberal Minister, Linda Reynolds, has had a big legal victory today with a West Australian Supreme Court judge ruling she was defamed by her former staffer, Brittany Higgins. She's been awarded more than $300,000 in damages. Ms Higgins has alleged she was raped by another Reynolds staffer in the Senator's office in 2019. Bruce Lehrman strongly denies that allegation and no findings have been made against him in a criminal court. Today's defamation case dealt with social media posts of Brittany Higgins and her now husband David Shiraz back in 2023. Reporter Rebecca Trigger has the details for us. Rebecca, tell us a bit more about what led up to this case.
Well, Sam, this trial has been focused on three social media posts made by Ms. Higgins in 2022 and 2023. But to really understand the background here, I'd have to take you back to the federal election in 2019. This all relates to how the allegation that Ms. Higgins was raped in Parliament in 2019 was then handled by her then boss, former Senator Linda Reynolds. And there's also been an examination, particularly of whether there was some kind of political conspiracy by the then Liberal government to cover up the rape in the lead up to the 2019 election.
So, Rebecca, Justice Paul Tottle has found that the then Senator Reynolds was defamed. What were his reasons?
So Justice Tottle found that there were defamatory imputations in all three social media posts that Ms. Higgins made. These included an implication that Senator Reynolds had somehow pressured Ms. Higgins not to proceed with a genuine complaint of sexual assault and was also hypocritical in her advocacy of human rights and women's rights in particular. The posts also implied that Ms. Reynolds had mishandled Ms. Higgins' allegation that she was raped in Parliament House in 2019. Now, Ms. Higgins' defence to that was that this was simply true, that her complaint was mishandled, particularly during the court proceedings. She pointed to a now infamous meeting held in the Senator's office where the rape allegedly occurred sort of immediately in the aftermath. And that's something that Ms. Higgins had shared through her lawyer. It was very triggering for her. But Justice Tottle found that Mr. Higgins' defence of truth had failed. He found that there were defamatory imputations there. And we heard through the 5 weeks of this trial, Senator Reynolds told the court that she had, in fact, encouraged Ms. Higgins to go to the police, go to the AFP. She'd offered counselling and support and choices about working from home during the federal election campaign. So, yeah, ultimately $315,000 in damages were awarded for two of those three posts.
And I understand Linda Reynolds spoke outside the court after the judgment. What did she say?
Well, she talked about being greatly relieved. She felt that her reputation had been vindicated. And she said that the truth had finally come out.
I was falsely accused of conspiring with the then Prime Minister to cover up the rape of a young woman in my office. This lie was so shocking, it was so despicable and so devastating that I had no choice but to stand up tall and keep fighting, no matter how many times I was knocked down. Those lies cost me my reputation. It cost me my health and my career.
And Ms. Reynolds also had this message for the federal Labor government.
The very gross politicisation of this matter by Labor allowed Ms. Higgins to procure a multi-million dollar settlement. I'm not expecting an apology from the Labor government for their role in this completely fabricated Me Too political hit job. However, I do call on the Labor government, on the Australian government solicitors and HWL Ebsworth to carefully review Justice Tottle's findings. It's time for all of them to acknowledge they got it wrong and to bring this matter to a conclusion so the real healing can commence.
Rebecca, has there been any comment from Brittany Higgins or her husband, David Shiraz?
So Ms. Higgins has released a statement. She says that she's grateful that the matter has finally reached a conclusion. She said she was just 24 when this sexual assault occurred in Parliament House, and over 6 years now, these years have been marked by challenge, scrutiny and change. She says she accepts Linda Reynolds' feelings were hurt and that she's sorry for that and she wishes her well in the future. And she's sought to thank the Australian public for their compassion and understanding. She says her and her family are now looking forward to healing and rebuilding their lives.
Rebecca Trigger reporting there from Perth. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. You can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. Ahead, former West Coast Eagles player Mitch Brown wins praise for being the first AFL player to come out as bisexual. Iran's ambassador to Australia has been spotted for the first time since he and three embassy staffers were told they're being expelled from the country. The Prime Minister and the head of the intelligence agency ASIO made the announcement yesterday after revealing an investigation has found Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps was behind at least two anti-Semitic attacks in Australia late last year. The government's decisions to expel the diplomats and list that organisation organisation as a terrorist group have been applauded by Israel. But Iran is warning there will be consequences for Australia, and experts believe cyber warfare could be part of its response. Rachel Mealy filed this report.
The soon-to-be former ambassador, Ahmad Sadeghi, walked out of the Iranian embassy in Canberra and got straight into a waiting car. He now has less than 48 hours to leave the country. He was driven through the gates as the media swarmed. Up the road from the embassy, his expulsion and the ASIO file against Iran was discussed in Parliament.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. The Coalition welcomes the expulsion of the Iranian ambassador and stands ready to pass laws today to list the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terrorist organisation. We called on the government to expel the ambassador last year and demanded the IRGC be listed as a terrorist organisation more than 2 years ago. Since then, the Iranian regime has sponsored attacks on Australian soil. Prime Minister, why didn't you act sooner when the warnings were so clear and the risks so grave?
When we acted to, for the first time in the post-war era, expel an ambassador, something that those opposite or previous Labor governments have not done in the entire post-war period. This is very serious and it deserves a serious response.
Australia's security agency ASIO told the government on Monday that it had evidence to link Iran's military organisation with two anti-Semitic attacks on Australian soil. The government told the ambassador yesterday he was persona non grata in Australia and moved to declare the IRGC a terrorist organisation. Israel's government has applauded Australia's actions.
And so it's welcome that after the Prime Minister Netanyahu's timely intervention, that these actions have been taken by Australia's government.
The intervention he's referring to happened last week when Benjamin Netanyahu labelled Anthony Albanese a weak leader and someone who'd let down Australia's Jewish population by moving to recognise a Palestinian state. The Home Affairs Minister, Tony Burke, says politics didn't play a role.
Complete nonsense. Whatever is said by anyone else doesn't change the obligation of Anthony Albanese as Australian Prime Minister to defend and protect Australians.
Chris Taylor is the head of the Statecraft and Intelligence Policy Centre at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute.
That assessment by ASIO and the AFP must be remarkably persuasive. It's been persuasive enough to convince the Australian government to do something unprecedented since the Second World War in expelling an ambassador. And the fact that they're already acknowledging that there are other cases which they believe there may or may not be some kind of association, but that's not the focus, that actually they have this, you know, very definitive assessment in relation to these two particular cases. That says a great deal, I think.
Iran's foreign ministry has reacted angrily to the news, warning that Australia would face consequences.
It's really difficult to read into what they mean about that. I think there was reference to reciprocity, which would seem to suggest effectively the same circumstances that have occurred here with the ambassador and other embassy staff. That has already effectively happened preemptively by the Australian government withdrawing its staff from the embassy in Tehran. It's difficult to understand exactly what that might entail because otherwise the relationship isn't a particularly close or fruitful one. There aren't a lot of levers on either side of the relationship when it comes to the other. So one hopes that that's not something more nefarious. One hopes that it's effectively just a reciprocity in that diplomatic representation.
Google's threat intelligence group has warned Australian businesses to be on guard for Iran-aligned hackers targeting their systems. Chris Taylor says Iran has had form in this respect.
I think Australians should always be really cognizant around cybersecurity and around the activities of foreign governments that might be targeting Australia and Australians. And it's certainly true that in the past, Iran has used cyber attacks as a tool of its statecraft. So it's not inconceivable that if they were endeavouring to pursue more nefarious ways of responding to Australia, that cyber attacks might be one way of doing that.
Chris Taylor from the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, Rachel Mealy reporting. The Australian Football League has reached a historic milestone today, with a player coming out as its first openly bisexual man. Former West Coast Eagles defender Mitch Brown played 94 games for the club between 2007 and 2016. He's revealed the weight of hiding his sexuality contributed to his decision to retire in his late 20s. Advocates for the bisexual and gay communities say it's a momentous day for the AFL, and they're calling on the league to celebrate sexual diversity. Joanna Crothers prepared this report.
To the wing, Brown, full of valour and courage, takes the mark.
Mitch Brown played for a decade at the highest level of Australian rules football.
Cut off by Brown, back into the team this week.
94 games at one of the AFL's biggest clubs, the West Coast Eagles.
And too good, Brown. Good to see him back, Mitch Brown.
Now he's said something publicly that no former or current AFL player has said before.
I played in the AFL for 10 years for the West Coast Eagles, and I'm a bisexual man.
Former defender Mitch Brown took it upon himself to contact a reporter at online news publication The Daily Oz about a story it published on the recent homophobic slur made by suspended Adelaide Crows star Isaac Rankin.
It was a moment in time for me, and it was seconds. But leading up to that, it's been years.
This is a landmark moment. For years, observers have been wondering when the first AFL player would take this step. Brown played for the Eagles from 2007 to 2016, and in his interview with News Daily Oz, described the AFL's culture as hyper-masculine. He says there were times he was in fear of talking about his sexuality because of the things he saw and heard during his career. That's something which doesn't surprise Carrington Brigham, who plays the game at a local level in Sydney.
I used to play local football in near Ballarat, and I remember myself at that time not understanding my own sexuality, how difficult and challenging the homophobic slurs were consistently. And what I had to endure in the late 90s was quite awful.
He says those experiences drove him away from the game he loved. Decades on, he's now the secretary of the Newtown Breakaways Football Club, which is made up mostly of LGBTIQA plus players and celebrates inclusivity.
It took me 20 years to come back to the AFL to remember that AFL was my tribe, that was the league and competition that I wanted to become part of once again.
While the Professional Women's League, the AFLW, includes a pride round, the Men's League does not, and Carrington Brigham says the game has likely lost potential players because of its lack of diversity. While Mitch Brown has come out publicly as a retired player, he doubts current AFL players would feel empowered to do the same.
As tough and as grueling as the competitive sport is, it's extraordinarily thrilling and fun and competitive. I guess what has been so disappointing from the AFL over the years is that while they have tried to include new programs over the last 10 years to make it more inclusive with the addition of Pride Round every year, it still seems like there is an undercurrent of we don't want to do too much too fast.
Dash Heath Painter is the CEO of Health Equity Matters, a peak body for organisations addressing health in the LGBTIQA plus community. He says Mitch Brown is breaking decades of silence and opening the door for others to follow.
We really applaud his strength and his honesty in coming forward with his story. You do get a sense that this has been on his mind for many years, and that's a heavy weight.
He's urging the AFL to follow the lead of other professional sports in making the playing environment safer for LGBTIQA plus people.
This is a window of opportunity for the AFL to engage in some really deep thinking about how they can create a safer environment so some of the experiences that Mitch has disclosed in his testimony are not experienced by current and future players.
And he'd like to see the AFL and the West Coast Eagles publicly back Mitch Brown.
There's been a lot of talk about having pride rounds and opportunities to celebrate diversity in the competition, and the AFL seems to have balked at that. The AFL needs to look at ways of demonstrating that they are committed to inclusion in a way that is embedded in the competition, and that could be through inclusion training for players and officials. But I think the AFL needs to look at opportunities to send a signal that they are willing to celebrate what has happened with Mitch and his announcement today.
In his interview with the Daily Oz, Mitch Brown says he believes there are currently gay and bisexual players playing in the AFL who've chosen not to come out publicly. The AFL and the West Coast Eagles have been contacted for comment.
Joanna Crothers reporting. Thanks for joining me for PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. The podcast of the full program is available on the ABC Listen app. And that's where you'll find ABC News Daily with Sam Hawley each weekday morning too. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Good night.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. It was an extraordinary announcement. Flanked by senior ministers and the nation's spy chief, the Prime Minister revealed Iran had directed at least two anti-Semitic attacks in Australia last year. And now we've cut all ties with Tehran. Today, terrorism expert Greg Barton on what we know and what Iran was hoping to achieve. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.